From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Hi, and welcome to another John Hannam Meets. Today is a rather special show. We're going to celebrate the life of Leslie Grantham, one of the nicest guys I ever met in my 44 years as an interviewer. So, we're going back to 2008, when I met him backstage at the Devonshire Park Theatre, Eastbourne.
Another Hannam Archive.
Nice to see you again, Leslie.
And you, John.
It's always a great buzz to chat to you because you've been there, you've done it.
Yeah, well, so have you. You know, I mean, I think we go back quite a while now, don't we?
We do. And the exciting thing is you're currently touring in Dad's Army Marches On. I know you're enjoying it, aren't you?
Love it, love it.
I rate you, Leslie Grantham, as still the most famous soap star of them all.
Well,
I know you're very modest.
Very kind of you. I mean, I was very lucky. I was given a terrific part to play, written wonderfully, created by Julia Smith and Tony Holland, who are sadly no longer with us. But I was just lucky. And I think, I've been lucky with a lot of things in my life, so that's fine.
Christmas Day 1986.
Yeah.
You uttered three words, didn't you? Go on, and just do them once more, will you? Go on.
Oh, happy Christmas, Ant, yeah.
30 million.
Yeah, not bad. Wish it was pounds, don't you?
Yeah. They get excited now, don't they? 10 million, 12 million. 20 million watched that talent show. 30 million saw you that day.
Yeah, well, again, that's the beauty, I think, of doing the show then, because although we were only twice a week and with the omnibus on a Sunday, what happens now because people say to me all the time, why don't you get back in and sort them out? I say, I've been killed. I said, no, we don't care. The audience doesn't care. And that's a sad indictment of four or five episodes a week, because the storylines come around quickly. The quality of the writing can't be as good, and the quality of the acting and all that cannot be as good because they're under so much pressure now. When you're doing two shows a week, you've got the luxury of rehearsing properly. You've got the luxury of the directors being able to try things out. And I think the audience at the moment is being shortchanged because there's nothing to look forward to. I used to remember walking back from the local station, a tube station, to where I lived in Fulham. And suddenly I'd think, wow. And all I could hear was the EastEnders theme, because it would be that time of night. Now people were rushing home, so we'll never miss it. And you're not getting that because it's too much. It's like having too much icing on a Christmas cake. You know, it becomes a little bit sickly after a while, doesn't it? I mean, it's the same in your business, John. You know, if you were to play the same records every time you're on there, people go, yeah, he's great. Yeah, John's great. But I wish he'd find something a bit different.
When you look back, over half the British population watched that particular Christmas, didn't
it? Yeah, and that week, I mean, I think it worked out with the omnibus and the... because it was shown in the afternoon and the evening, and then again, I think 84 million people watched it, which is like, in those, I think it was 27 million more than it was in the country. I know we had a lot of illegal immigrants at the time, but I don't think we had that many.
We're in Eastbourne, one of my favourite places.
Yeah, love it, yeah.
I like Eastbourne because when I walk along, Leslie, most people are older than me.
It's something about this neck of the woods that I do actually love, whether it's Worthing or Eastbourne. You've got the Sussex Downs, you've got the sea. I'm going to upset a lot of people. I'm not a great lover of Brighton. I wouldn't like to live in Brighton.
You were a mod there many years ago.
Yeah, that's right, on the beach, yeah. But I wouldn't like to, I don't know, it's, and when I first came to Eastbourne, it was a little bit run down, and they've spent a fortune with the replacing the groins. They've done some lovely, put some decking out on the beaches down there where you can sit and have a coffee. I think of the two places in this neck of the woods that I really do like, it's Eastbourne and Worthing, but my heart, believe it or not, is Worthing. I want to live in Worthing. If I live long enough to get to that age where I need sheltered accommodation, I think Worthing is the place I want to be. The mobility scooters, they're sportier there. You know.
Can I just say, since we last met, I've read your book.
And it's very kind.
Fantastic. One of the best reads I've had for ages, because you being you, you're very honest, and It was just a fascinating read, really.
Well, that's very kind. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did it as a sort of therapy, really, of thinking, well, that's those monkeys off my back. It doesn't work. It just means that people, I think, if they're going to buy the book and they want to find out about me and what I am and who I am and how I am, and then they'll probably get a bit of insight into it. And a lot of people have said the same sort of words that you did, that they found it fascinating. I was very brave to write it, but I couldn't write anything that wasn't the truth, really. So I did okay for a guy who can't write. That's fine.
It's an amazing story, really, because if you hadn't shouted from the rain,
yeah,
on that one particular day when you sort of got inspired to join the army, wonder what you'd have been doing now.
Possibly painting and decorating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's odd, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I've been very lucky. You know, we talked briefly before we were on air about certain people, and in my life I've met some fantastic people, and one of them was this guy we just talked about, Shep Woolley, who, you know, when I was in sort of the Portsmouth way, he gave up his time to come in and entertain us poor lads. And you know, and I always get every now and again, so I'm so bumped into Shep Woolley. He says hello. You might not remember, well, he might not remember me, but I have a lot of affection for a lot of people in that sort of, in especially in the Portsmouth area, who came in and gave their time. And in fact, a couple were been coming to see me in shows for years, and sadly, Keith and Christine, sadly Keith died last year. But Christine still keeps in touch, and she's coming to, I know she's coming to Fareham to see the show. But so it's very nice that I must have done something right, that some people remember me and remember me with affection.
In a way, the army changed your life forever for several different reasons, really.
Yeah.
I know, obviously, you went to prison, which has been well chronicled. And in a strange way, you obviously did your time. Joining that drama group, Leslie, in prison really gave you an incentive, didn't it?
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, because I think I always wanted to be a performer, and anybody who's sort of a certain age will remember when things like Clark Brothers were on the Sunday night.
Oh, I remember them, yeah.
I used to want to emulate them and slide across the floor, you know, drive my parents mad. And and no one really, apart from Michael Caine, I suppose, sort of came from a council estate in those days and went to drama school until John Osborne brought his plays out. So I used to lie and say I was going to watch football on a Saturday afternoon, though I'm football mad. And I'd sneak off to the new theatre in Bromley, and or the little theatre in Bromley, and watch a show. And then I'd get the evening paper, because you used to get a Saturday sports paper then, and I'd say, oh, you've been in the match, because I'd be reading the review. And because one day I got called out because I only had an half-time review. So, yeah, no, and then joining the drama group in Wormer Scrubs, and then subsequently going to Kingston Prison in Portsmouth there, and then eventually I ended up in Lay Hill in Gloucester. And that did give me the incentive, and people saw something in me that they said they encouraged me to become an actor. I haven't been found out yet, so I'm still getting away with it.
Twice in your life, you were really at a low ebb, weren't you? Once, I know, you thought about suicide, and another occasion you took pills, and you've come through, which is fantastic, really, Leslie, isn't it?
Well, I think I've been very lucky. I've been sort of surrounded by good mates and good family and that. And but yeah, I think a cry for help sometimes is the only way we can deal with things. And sadly, a lot of people haven't had the assist or the help that I've had. And David Scarborough, for once, who was in EastEnders, who played the original Mark Fowler, sadly, he couldn't cope with things and threw himself off Beachy Head, which isn't far from here, obviously. And I'm sure that, I think it's the way society's going, isn't it, that we seem to be more obsessed about the wrong things, and we're encouraged to be obsessed about the wrong things, whether it's money or whatever. And cries for help, they land on deaf ears, don't they? And a lot of people end up tragically losing their lives. I was at a low ebb several times, but I managed to. Or maybe someone was telling me not to do it. Maybe someone said, "Oh, don't be silly." It was that there were unseen eyes that had heard my cry. But you know, when you've got a good family, when you've got good friends, that's what helps you through.
I know there was a petition from the prison officers just before we leave the subject, and they were on your side, weren't they? Which is encouraging for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean, I think I was always a bit of a square peg in a round hole, having come from the army and going to into a civilian establishment, if you like. They're not quite sure of you. And then obviously because I got involved with the drama group, and no one who was straight got involved with the drama group. I think they thought, what's he up to? And then I think gradually they realised that, that, you know, we're all the same, and we all have different ways that we want to get through things. And I was fortunate that I actually found an avenue, which I'd always wanted to do, but never had the balls, if you like, to do it. And I think in the end, you know, I had a lot of time for the people in Kingston prison, and some of the staff there were great. I mean, there's always this them and us. It's never them and us. There's always grey areas, and there's always areas that people do go out of their way to help people. So I think I've been very, very lucky, again, that for some reason people, whether it's members of the public, whether it's members of our industry or other people that you come in contact with who see something decent in you.
Last thing about prison, when you left, £17.11 in your pocket. Yeah. You've done all right, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got £17.19 now, yeah. So I've had a bit of a profit. If the Icelandic banks and the volcano hadn't gone off, I'd have a little bit more.
You did a bit of painting and decorating because you said you probably would have followed that route, which you did for a while, and then you went to Webber Douglas, of course, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I did the painting and decorating too. I did the German embassy by day and the VD clinical by night. paid my way through drama school for 2 years, and then when I was at drama school, and it got heavier in the fact that we were working Saturdays and late at night, the college sort of found, you know, I ended up cleaning the place, and I would do, so they knew that I would really want to be it and be an actor, and so I used to clean the college every day, and then during the breaks I'd go in and paint it and revamp it, you know, really tart it up. So yeah, so I was very lucky. Again, the principal, Rafe Jago, who sadly Webber Douglas is no longer here, it's just merged with Central, or has been sold to Central, I think he thought, well, this guy wants to do it and he's got no money, he hasn't got much, so I'll find work for him to do. So I used to assist in the office when the term broke up, or I'd earn money showing the auditionees through. So yeah, I've been very lucky.
Looking back, you've done some amazing things, because I know you didn't have an equity card, did you? Which was, you were going to go into Jake's End, really.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You didn't have an equity card, yeah. Which was tough going, really, wasn't it, for you?
Yeah, but I think it was probably someone saying, yeah, it's all very nice to be offered the second lead in a film, a TV film, the first day, you know, your first job. But maybe it's another way of someone saying, no, hold on, get a smaller part. And then, because from the smaller part, I got taken to India and Jewel and the Crown by the same director. So it all works itself out.
You know? I know you worked in a greengrocer's and a very designer-conscious clothes shop, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I think you have to, don't you? You just can't, you know, out of all the kids who were at drama school with me, I think I've been the luckiest. Is that there was another girl, Linda Henry, who took a while to sort of really take off, but she did Bad Girls, and she's now in EastEnders. I think she's Shirley in EastEnders, but it took her a while. But, yeah, there are a lot more talented people than me who were probably sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring and then become disillusioned. If you've got something to do whilst you're waiting for the phone to ring, then you don't look so hungry when you're going for the job.
You actually made your professional acting debut, I'm from the Isle of Wight, as you know, just across the water we have Portsmouth and we have Southampton.
Yeah.
I think it was Southampton where you started, virtually.
With Jake's End, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great, yeah. But we had a few problems with that show. I turned up and I was in this hotel and they kept saying, you're called. So me being keen, would be up at the crack of dawn, waiting, and then nothing. And then suddenly at night time we did the scene, and it seems that a member of the cast had gone in and upset someone in a shop or something. And then they sort of lost the location. So, yeah, but in the end, hey, I've been very lucky, you know. I learned a lot of Kingston Dramas group, and I learned a lot on that first job at Southampton. So maybe I shouldn't think about Worthing. Maybe I should think about moving to the Isle of Wight.
There was a lovely story in the book when you went for an audition to play a prisoner and you didn't get it.
No, I said didn't look anything like a prisoner at all.
Is it a fact that you almost went into Coronation Street?
I was offered, I was asked to be Bette Lynch's boyfriend in it. It was a pal of Geoffrey Hughes's.
Yeah, Jeff lives on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, it was pal of Geoffrey Hughes. He was also going to be a prisoner, but I decided that I didn't really want to be in a soap opera. And it was by the same guy who directed Doctor Who.
Yeah, you were in that, weren't you?
Yeah, and then he recommended me for EastEnders. But although Julia Smith and Tony Holland used to teach at Webber Douglas, they used to teach television, and she had originally said to me one day, "Have you got an equity card?" I went, "No." "Why?" "Oh," she said, "oh, there's a part for you in Angels," and so I'm glad I didn't get that, because then I wouldn't have been the iconic character.
Exactly. Going back to Geoff Hughes, I've seen a picture in your book of three of you dressed up as women.
Yeah, well, possibly one of the nicest guy I've ever met in my life, sadly no longer with us, Don Henderson, who, I did a Borman before EastEnders. That was through luck. Because an actor who was playing the part broke his leg playing football, and Jim O'Brien, who directed me in Jake's End and then Jewel in the Crown, said, "Oh, I know a guy, phone me up," and said, "What was I doing?" And we were just about to go to America for a holiday to visit my brother-in-law on his honeymoon. That not a, you know, it wasn't a two-week honeymoon, it was a sort of a longer one, and a thing called the People's Express, if anyone remembers that, which was the original sort of budget airline. And I said, "I don't know." And I said to my wife, "Are we, what are we doing?" She said, "Why?" I said, "Well, there's this part in Granada." "Oh, no, I can go on my own." She said, "I could see David on my own." And so I said, "Yeah, I can do it." And then he said, "Hold on." And in 10 minutes, he said, "Can you get the train?" I said, "Can I?" I was there, up there, ready to go. So, and that's how I met Don. And then Don became a great mate. And then when I was doing a personal appearance in Coventry Way, I think it was, Don turned up and said, "Great to see you." And then we're doing a thing together for Pat Phoenix just after she died. And Don suddenly turned up and said, "Oh, I really want to work with you again, mate." And next 2 days later, he phoned him and said, "Oh, why don't you meet Murray Smith?" And he'd come up with this idea of the Paradise Club. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and then when we did Children in Need, there was, you know, Pretty Boy in the middle as the Andrews sisters. And
that's
there was
it.
Geoffrey and Don. No, I couldn't be a woman. I couldn't wear those stockings. And they made us wear stockings and suspenders.
Put that light out!
I'm trying to relax and listen to John Hannum.
I'm with Leslie Grantham in Eastbourne, not far from your mod days on Brighton Seafront.
Oh, there, yeah. When I listen to all those stories now and how it was all set up. It was all set up for the papers, just that thing. A load of us had gone down just for the day, like we did. And because a load of other ones turned up, and so, you know, everyone give you free drinks if you go and run at each other on the thing, you know. And we stopped halfway across and helped some woman. The young woman was struggling to get up the steps with a pushchair, so that's how bad it was. So, again, it's sort of, but Brighton in those days was, there was the sort of places that you went to. No one came to Eastbourne. No one went to Eastbourne. No one went to Worthing. No one went to Hove, which are beautiful parts of the thing, because it had that old feel about it. You know, I'm not being derogatory, I'm not being derisory, but when you're in your kids, Brighton, it's like, or Southend, they're the places that you wanted to go to because that's all you ever heard about. And then you say, "Well, why don't we go to Bognor Regis?" Or why don't we go, "Oh, no, you don't want to go there, it's full of old people." And now I'm an old person, I want to come to old.
Yes.
I think it's all part of the way we're brainwashed in what to do when we're young. Our formative years and because television was new, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So basically, although it's been around since the 30s, but we get all our information. Now it's easy because everyone's in the internet there's more and more newspapers and magazines and that to read. But when you're spoon-fed dribs and drabs, you think, "Oh, yeah, that's where I want to go."
We wouldn't have been talking about Pete the Barrel Boy years after EastEnders, but Den Watts, of course, still talked about passionately by people that loved
the
series.
I was very lucky to get that part because I did go up and read for Pete the Barrel Boy, but I couldn't say Tweakle.
But you got the opportunity. Well, you didn't really want to stay for too long, did you?
No, initially? I didn't know. But the interesting thing that that Derek Martin, who plays Charlie in EastEnders now, was also one of the original choices for Den.
Was he?
Yeah, because Peter Dean and Derek Martin did a series for the BBC called Law and Order, which was a three-parter. And it was The Prisoner's Tale, The Policeman's Tale, and The Lawyer's Tale. And it was Ken someone, I can't remember his surname, sort of quirky actor who played the solicitors. And that was a sort of an improv thing. And that was a very, very successful, very much for Peter and very much for Derek Martin. And then Peter, from that, got the part of Elsie Tanner's truck driver boyfriend in Coronation Street. They built the caff for him so he could meet her. And Derek Martin did a series about, I think it was King's Castle or something like that for ITV. And there was talk of those two playing, you know, Pete and Den. And it was only because I think I walked in and that Julia and Tony remembered me from drama school. Also, they saw me as not the atypical publican. Most publicans on television are rather rotund.
Yeah.
And although in the business there are a lot of thin, skinny publicans, but television sometimes does go for the obvious and misses the obvious. So I was just lucky.
You became a household name, and everybody wanted to talk to you, wanted a part of you. And I suppose you realised eventually somebody would unearth your past. Did you expect that or not really?
I just naive about everything, you know. Of course, you forget that there's a lot of people who sometimes do things from an innocent sort of point of view. And then obviously a lot of people do it for financial gains, and it's become more and more prolific now, isn't it, for people to make money out of people. You know, we're going to get it with the election, aren't we? You know, the minute someone's leading in the polls, someone's going to be dishing the dirt. And because in the end, it doesn't suit certain people and certain businesses in this country to have anything other than the safe bet.
When the press are after you like they were with you, did it really get you on occasions, Leslie? Or?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it, no, I think I'm. People always think, oh, he's tough-skinned, he can do this, he can get away. You're not, you know, you're a veneer that you have to put on. And it's more about the pressures that your family and friends are under. And at the same time, you do become paranoid because you don't trust anybody. Because things get into the papers, you think, well, who did I say that to? Who knows about that? And because accountants were selling story, post office engineers were selling stories, you know, come, they were tapping the phone. And so, and then, you know, when my oldest son was born, we were under siege for 4 days. And in the end, the poor kid had to be, you know, when the district nurse came around, she just said, give him a dummy. It's no, you'd never be able to breastfeed the poor kid. So you do, and it's become even more now. You know, you suddenly have got, anybody can become a paparazzi. So anybody with a camera, and there's no, you don't have to, with all these digital cameras, you don't have to know how to work it. You just, well, you know, you just press a button and it self-focuses it. So anyone can sell photographs of anyone. And, you know, people say, oh, anybody can act. Yeah, anybody can act. But you've got to sustain that level of excellence, if you like, to survive. It's like people would say, well, anyone could play music on the radio, you know, switch a button. Yeah, but it's no good just having non-stop music. The audience wants to listen to someone talking. You know, you wouldn't want to be stuck in a lift for 24 hours with music, would you?
Not at all. No.
You want to you wouldn't mind if there's someone else to talk to. And that's sadly is another thing of way we're going downhill, if you like, in every part of our industry, because it's all become, you know, it's all can become computerized, digitalized. And look at films, you know, you don't need to employ 400 extras anymore, you employ 40 and have them.
Yeah, I know.
It's all this, you know, computer generated images. And and I look at all the old black and white movies that I grew up on, and the people that I fell in love with on the big screen, and what they achieved with what limited resources they had, although they were the top of the range at the time, was phenomenal. And now, they're making films now where there won't be any actors in it at all. They'll just be computer-generated images. Avatar, if you like, is what, half and half. It's a hybrid. But someone will bring out film where it will be basically a cartoon and the characters will look three-dimensional, and they will look like John Wayne, or they will look like Tom Cruise or whoever. So, sadly, yeah, and they do it with music, don't they? How many things are all, you know, there's a lot of the stuff now, it's all on you press a button and the backing track is already there.
Should you have left EastEnders and should you have gone back, really?
Yeah, I should have left and I should have gone back, but sadly, the reason I went back was the fact is that, and it's still, it's a terrible thing to have to say, and it sounds like I'm being very big-headed, and I'm not. Unfortunately, Demwatts was bigger than the show. It became unbearable for me, who is a guy who was very lucky, who comes from a very simple background and a very troubled background, to perform when I'm continually under pressure, under siege from the press. I think it was 2 days when I wasn't on the front cover of any newspaper. And that's when Prince Andrew got engaged to Fergie, and when Terry Wogan was called Old Big Ed. And I wrote to Fergie and Andy and congratulated them on their thing and said, thanks for getting me off. And they wrote me a letter back and said, any time.
Oh,
and then,
nice.
Wogan phoned me up and said, see, I've knocked you off the front page. So I didn't leave because I wanted to go on and do bigger and better things. I just felt that and it was also a detriment to the show because it was causing there was a bit of animosity that the fact that acts think, why is he getting all this? Why is he getting all that? And it wasn't as if I was courting it. And then because actors were then thinking, well, I'm going to start getting some publicity. So they would come up with things and the press weren't interested in it. So I left and I was very lucky. I got a miniseries in Scotland the day I was actually driving back from Dartmoor Prison where we'd been filming to say they wanted me to play this boxing promoter. And then straight after that, I got Paradise Club and then...
You did Cluedo, Fort Boy.
Oh, yeah, and all that stuff. So I've been very, very lucky. And then I was asked to go back because they wanted to kill the Watts family off, kill Dem Watts off completely. And it hasn't worked. Although there's no Watts family in...
Will you ever go back, do you think?
If they asked me again, I'd go back, but I'd have... This time I'd say I want better scripts. I didn't think the scripts... The one thing they said to me, Dem is never cosy, we'll not be cosy. And what happened was they changed producers, and the first thing he does is... He's making toast for his family and he's making cups of tea and they bring a wife in for him. Well, I think they'd lost their plot, lost their way. But they've got rid of the Watts family completely. But I think the way EastEnders is going, there's a new producer in now. And I was asked to do something for the 25th anniversary, which was great. And every now and again, they always ask me to come out and comment on stuff. So... And their viewing figures, I gather, go up when that happens. They got this new producer from Hollyoaks, and I just heard on the radio the other day that they've axed about 8 members of the cast, or they're getting rid of them. I think maybe it might go the way of Hollyoaks. It might go with a lot of youngsters in it, which is. It's, I think Julia Smith might be looking down and saying no. But when I went back, every time I go back, all the crew come out of their way to see me. And we were for the 20th. I didn't hang around to the party long because I was rehearsing the next day. All the crew and the producers and a lot of the actors, people I've never met, will go, oh, I want to meet you, lovely. So, yeah, if I went back, I'd have to go back to my long-lost twin brother, wouldn't I?
Yes, you would. So, Dad's Army, Private Walker, the Spiv. What a part for you, eh?
Brilliant. Very hard for me to play it. Yes. Spiv, but I've been very lucky. It's one of those parts that it's a joy to play. It's a joy to be in. It's great. Again, another of those iconic television programmes. And I'm not trying to sound big-headed, but I've had wonderful accolade from Jimmy Perry and David Croft. You know, they've said it on television, they've said it in the press, and they've said it in the programme that I am Walker, and which is great to hear. But I was very lucky because, you know, what a hard act to follow, James Beck, who sadly, though one of the youngest in Dad's army, was one of the first to die. I mean, all my career I've been very, very lucky. So one day it's going to come to an end, but by then I'll be living by the seaside and on a mobility scooter with Go Faster stripes.
Oh, Worthing, if it's a mobility, Leslie Grant, it was always a pleasure to talk to you.
And you, John.
I find you one of the nice guys, and you chat, and it's lovely just always to chat to you.
Brilliant. Well, I hope you enjoy the rest of the
year. I'm looking forward to seeing you this afternoon, actually. Brilliant.
It's great. He's got a swell personality. He meets and greets the stars with such amenity. Good enough to make you coming out of the street. John Hannah-Mead. That's right.
Happy memories there of an interview I did in 2008 in Eastbourne with the late Leslie Grantham, who sadly died in June 2018. I interviewed Leslie several times during his life and found him a perfect gentleman, always pleased to see you, and whenever you got into his dressing room, it was just a delight, and he was so kind. On the very last occasion I interviewed him in Eastbourne, actually he asked me to come around after the show. We'd done the interview before the show, and he said, come round afterwards and we can have our picture taken and I'll keep on my costume. He was in Dad's army at the time, and so there we were, and we had our photograph taken, and it was the very last time I ever saw him.
Isle of Wight Radio.